ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ईश्वरे नवघाय महात्म्ये राचीन विकल्प चिकार्थ विचार प्रमाणाभासा कुटार्थ शास्त्र कलिनांत करनस्रय दुर्वग्रह वालिनं विवादनावसर उभारथ समस्त माया मये खदेव एवामयम् एवात्ममयम् अन्तराध्या कोन्वर्थो दुर्घात इव भवति स्वरूप भवात्। Translation: O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. O Lord, since you are the Supreme Person, the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, the supreme controller, your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you, who are transcendental to their material conceptions. You are one without a second, and therefore in your contradictions. Therefore in you, contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress, are not contradictory. Your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there is no duality in your constitutional position, you can do everything by the influence of your energy. Purport: The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being self-sufficient, is full of transcendental bliss, Atmananda. He enjoys bliss in two ways: when he appears happy, and when he appears distressed. Distinctions and contradictions are impossible in him, because only from him have they emanated. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all knowledge, all potency, all strength, opulence, and influence. There is no limit to his powers. Since he is full in all transcendental attributes, nothing abominable from the material world can exist in him. He is transcendental and spiritual, and therefore conceptions of material happiness and distress do not apply to him. We should not be astonished to find contradictions in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no contradictions. That is the meaning of his being supreme. Because he is all-powerful, he is not existence or non-existence. He is pleased to protect his devotees by killing their enemies. He enjoys both the killing and the protection. Such freedom from duality applies not only to the Lord, but also to his devotees. In Vrindavan, the damsels of the Brajabhumi enjoy transcendental bliss in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and they feel the same transcendental bliss in separation when Krishna and Balaram leave Vrindavan for Mathura. There is no question of material pains or pleasures for either the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotees, although they are sometimes superficially said to be distressed or happy. One who is Atmarama is blissful in both ways. Non-devotees cannot understand the contradictions present in the Supreme Lord or his devotees. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Bhaktiyamam abhijanati. The transcendental pastimes can be understood through devotional service. To non-devotees, they are inconceivable. Achintya kalauye bhava natams tarkena yojayet. The Supreme Lord and his form, name, pastimes, and paraphernalia are inconceivable to non-devotees, and one should not try to understand such realities simply by logical arguments. They will not bring one to the right conclusion about the absolute truth. So the demigods are continuing their prayers to the Lord here. And now they're bringing out this point about contradictions. They're all contradictions are reconciled in the Lord. That in the material world, contradictions are a difficulty because they create problems that we cannot, we don't know what to do. Because to do something, you have to have a conclusion. And then with that conclusion, you can act. So then contradictions make a problem, because when there's contradictions, there's many things that can happen and you don't know exactly what to do. So without the conclusion, it makes it very hard to act. So in the material world, everybody is very busy trying to get rid of these, contradictions. They like things very nice, straight, logical, very orderly in this way. And then they are able to deal. But without that, it makes a big problem. But the difficulty comes is that unless one is based one's conclusions on the Supreme Lord Himself, on His, on the bona fide scriptures that give transcendental conclusion, then the conclusions of the materialist will be wrong. And so therefore, when they try to reconcile these differences, they will be starting from the wrong platform. So even though they use their intelligence very nicely, they look at things very logically, they put things in a very nice order, but the conclusion will still be wrong because they started with the wrong premise. So this is the difficulty for them to understand the Supreme Lord. Now, when they see these contradictions in the material world because of lack of spiritual knowledge, then they think that these same contradictions exist in the transcendental realm. So when they hear about the Lord, they see it as the same as here. So many contradictions are there. And so then they don't know how to deal with this, other than dealing with them in the way that they normally deal, taking their own conclusions and then trying to work out some logical situation where they come up with some right or wrong answer. And then based on that, they choose what they feel is right and then act. So they try to apply this to the Lord, and so then they come up with all varieties of conclusions. And none of them actually know the Lord because of this. So that is the point that is being made by the demigods, is because of this, they cannot come to any proper conclusion. They can't create a conclusion here. And they can't understand the Supreme Lord because of this improper conclusion, their improper basis of everything. So if we actually want to get understanding, then we have to take it from authority. The authority gives us the direction. Authority actually tells us what is what and gives us the proper conclusion. Because Krishna being the source of all contradictions, all the energies, and then those contradictions become perverted in the material world, He is not subject to those perversions. He is not subject to any of the difficulties in the material world, because they are coming from Him in their perverted form. So they don't apply to Him. He is different from them. We in the material world are controlled by them, but He is separate from them, so they don't apply to Him at all. So if we follow the scriptures, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, then we are able to actually understand all these contradictions. So then Srila Prabhupada points out here, because they are Krishna, He is the Atmarama. Therefore, whatever the situation, He is happy. And these situations are there just to create His happiness. All these different contradictions, then He enjoys both. But the materialistic living entity doesn't enjoy both, because they have a particular agenda. And because of that agenda, they want things to go in a particular way. So when it goes in the opposite way, or in a contradictory way, then they are not satisfied. They feel upset.
or they feel something is lacking. So then, but for Krishna, these are all there to create variety. It means he is already Atmarama. Everything is very nice. He is there. He's the Supreme Lord. He is the, you know, source of all everything. And he is Atmarama. So it's very clear, very straightforward. But to expand that, then he expands his energies. And energy by nature is contradictory. It moves in various ways. We see electricity, when it moves so many different ways. Lightning bolts, they move in so many ways. Water, it moves so many different ways. The air, everything moves in all kinds of ways, to the point where we'll call it chaos. Scientific term will be chaos. It doesn't make any sense. There's no logical pattern. Though as they study deeper and deeper, they see that there are mathematical equations by which you can say when water falls on an object, how it will move. But the equations are very vast. So only Krishna is intelligent enough to be able to see that there's no contradictions in these things. Everything's working perfectly according to his plan, because it has come from him. But this variety makes for variety in the pastimes, in the relationships. So in the spiritual world, there's no problem, because all they want to do is they're focused on Krishna, please Krishna. So if that means there's a very happy situation where they're with Krishna, or a seemingly unhappy situation where they're not with Krishna, it doesn't matter, because in both situations they will remember Krishna and they will please Krishna. And Krishna being pleased, they are pleased. So there's no contradiction. But when we see this and we see, yes, I like these situations and I would like to be the enjoyer of these situations, then we come to the material world. And then the living entity becomes the Purusha and the material nature becomes the Prakriti. So the material nature then working according to the nature of Prakriti and being contradictory then creates a lot of problems for the living entity who is under the control of the Prakriti. Because in the spiritual realm, Prakriti is under Krishna's control. So it acts according to how he likes. But in the material world, then we are controlled by the Prakriti, the living entity who feels their Purusha, or the enjoyer. So this creates a lot of problems. You have one desire you want to enjoy in this way, and then so many other situations arise which don't fit with that. But for Krishna, that problem is not there. Because he creates all these situations so there'll be variety in the pastimes. So there'll be so many different situations in which he can have exchanges with the devotees. And because of these exchanges, then so much nice, unlimited pastimes and unlimited pleasure is experienced. So for Krishna, it's not a problem. But the living entity, because they've given up this relationship with the Lord, then this creates a problem. Because then the living entity, in these contradictory situations, it gives him trouble. But for Krishna, it doesn't. So this is the situation. Because the past, everything that goes on here is a reflection of the spiritual realm. You know, it either a more, it's pure perversion, means it's pure reflection, where it looks externally the same, but instead of Krishna being the enjoyer, we are the enjoyer. And then from there, then it perverts into so many, you know, 8,400,000 varieties, in which then the perversions on those perversions, and then you have so many different situations. But that nature of contradiction still is there. The principles are still there. It's always. So these contradictions, they make for relationship. So if it's going in the way you like, you're happy. If it's not going the way you like, you're not happy. You have a small child. They're very cute. You want to establish some connection with them. So you go and you try to make some contact, you know, some look, some speaking, something. Then you find that they are contradictory to this. They are shy. So then the rasa becomes how to act in such a way to go beyond that barrier of shyness. And then if you're able to succeed and you're able to get a you know, how you say, a favorable look or glance, even though the shyness may stay, then is considered progress. The relationship is being established. And you don't mind the contradictory aspects. But if we find that no matter what we try, all the different tricks and niceness and this and that, the kid still doesn't want to have anything to do with this, then we get upset. We get angry. Or, you know, okay, leave this and then go. So the contradictions, if they go the way we want, then they add to the flavor. Otherwise, you just come up, nice kid, you start talking to him, no big deal. But if it's some endeavor, and then you get it, then you feel very, you know, so you've gained something very much. Right? Just like the person who works for his money, and he becomes very rich, he's worked very hard, he values it very much. Well, his son, who just automatically is rich, doesn't value the money at all. He spends it as he likes and doesn't really care. So that working, that endeavor to gain something, then gives a value. It gives a sense of, you know, satisfaction. So if the contradictoriness goes how we want, then we're satisfied in the relationships. But if they don't go as we want, then we're frustrated. So as Krishna is pointed out here, is with your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there's no duality in your constitutional position, you can do everything by the influence of your energy. So Krishna, all these situations are created so that he can enjoy the different varieties in the pastime. So he's in control of the internal potency. And so, therefore, everything, ultimately, it goes the way he wants. Like that. But he tastes the variety that the internal potency will arrange. But the living entity is not in control of the external energy. So therefore, when these contradictions arise, they are a great source of difficulty for the living entity. Because you want it to go in a certain way, you have no control over it. It's simply by our previous activities, our karma. You know, so the only control we have is if I behave nice now, in the future it'll become good. But for whatever nonsense I did in the past, that I'm going to suffer from now. And that's just the way it is. So it doesn't give the immediate satisfaction. It means you really have to work at it. You know, there's no quick solutions, you know, other than, you know, taking up devotional service. But otherwise, there's no, you're just stuck with whatever comes. So the living entity, the non-devotee, can understand this in the Lord, because he being the source, and it's out of affection. So all these different varieties, you don't mind. Like, if you have affection for somebody, all the different aspects, or how you say, facets of their personality or activities, adds to the flavor of the relationship. You know, they're not just, they just do one thing all the time. They get, you know, it's boring. They always tell the same joke. They always do the same thing. You know, it's like they always go to the one preparation. You know, that's it. You know, like, I always sing the same song. You know, it's like, so there's variety. And that variety then creates some flavor. And if it's always the same, then there's not so much flavor. So then, but that's as long as we appreciate that. So we're trying to do that. But when Krishna has all these contradictions, we can't understand how he's the biggest and he's the smallest. I mean, how does that work? You know, he's in knowledge of everything, in control of everything, but at the same time he's detached and he's not doing. He's the non-doer. You know? We think we're the doer, but actually we're not the doer. Right? The only thing that seems to be consistent is material energy does whatever she's supposed to do. Like that. You do this, you get that reaction. You have this desire, then if you endeavor, it's sanctioned by the Lord, you get it. So whatever is sanctioned by the Lord, and according to whatever is your activity, you get the reaction. So that's consistent. But unfortunately, since we're not in control of it, then we're not satisfied with that, you know, consistency. And the inconsistency that we want to be in control of, then it's not ours to be in control of. Only Krishna is. Any questions on this? Yes.
Could you tell me more about this? Today is on special ones, it is for sure.
to tell something about today's crucial tamavas.
How is the month starts? What is the part of this month?
The month is this crucial tam month, and then it's an extra month because we follow the lunar calendar, and the moon moves in a contradictory way. It is very erratic in its movement. A day for the moon may be as short as 19 hours or as long as 29. Well, the sun is always 24. You know, very, very minimal. Every 4 years, you need to put in 1 day for the sun. But every 3 years, you have to put in a full month for the moon. Because the moon lunar year is 11 days shorter than the sun. So you have to put in this month every 3 years. So then, that month, when it first manifests, then the pundits and the demigods, and no one knew what to do with the month. So they considered it's extra. The scriptures don't talk about doing any auspicious activities in the month. You know, you don't do samskaras, there's no marriages, you know. I mean, without samskaras and marriages, or establishing a new house, or moving, I mean, what's the fun, right? The fun is these things. So they considered, so it must be very inauspicious. So then they would neglect the month, speak badly about it, and, you know, they basically wanted nothing to do with the month. So the personification of this Malamas, then she went to Lord Vishnu and said that, you know, this is very difficult. You know, I'm supposed to do my duties of making this, you know, the years work properly for the moon, but everybody neglects me and speaks badly about me. So she felt very bad, and she felt it's better she dies, you know, if nobody's going to, you know, deal with her at all. So then Lord Vishnu said, don't worry about it, we'll go see Krishna. So she took her to see Krishna. And then when they went to visit Krishna, then Lord Vishnu said what was the problem about everyone's neglecting her. And like this, then Lord Vishnu, you know, stopped speaking and took a seat. And then Krishna, then he spoke and said that this Purushottama month is none different than himself. And whatever activities, devotional activities are done, then it's increased very, very greatly. So basically the reason that there is no mention in the scriptures for doing auspicious material activities, because the month is so auspicious, therefore you don't do those activities. Just like Ekadasi, we'll say you don't travel on Ekadasi. So what is the natural conclusion that basically everyone will come to? It's inauspicious to travel on Ekadasi, bad things will happen, therefore I don't travel. So then devotees were thinking like this in general, and it was brought up to Srila Prabhupada. And then it was asked, you know, is this the fact that Ekadasi is very inauspicious for travel, therefore? He said, no, it's quite actually the opposite. Because Ekadasi is so auspicious, except for preaching, why would you use it for travel? You can hear, you can chant, it's the mother of devotion. Anything you do will increase so much. So rather than, you know, travel to the market or go do some mundane activity, then therefore you should be using it for increasing your hearing and chanting and associating. Unless there's preaching engagement, then that's even more auspicious. So only auspicious things should be done. So here we have one full month of this. Where 1 month, then you have the opportunity that the whole thing is auspicious. Any devotional activity done, the benefits are greatly increased. So therefore the Shastras don't mention any times for auspicious, you know, material activities. So therefore no wedding, samskaras, or anything is done in this month. It's said that even the benefits are even greater than in Kartik, like that. So it's whatever you would do in Kartik, then you would think this is what you do in this month. You know, so therefore increased hearing, chanting, associating, like that, taking bath in holy rivers is considered, or holy tirthas is considered very great. And it's by being conscious of the month and following something for the month, taking bath, or especially taking bath and increasing hearing and chanting, and, you know, not being overly worried about luxurious, you know, living, then at the end of life, just for doing that, one will go back to Godhead. So that Krishna all explains to Lord Vishnu and everybody present. And in the discussion in the stories, then there's many, many persons, it was brought up, who had themselves in some way or another performed some activity in that month and got great benefit from the Purushottam month. There was a few kings and they were greatly opulent. And they were wondering, how it is that they were so opulent and everything is so wonderful. The kingdom works nicely, the family is nice, everything goes nice. And that's because in previous life, they had performed to some degree, the Purushottam Vrata, like that. And then in this life, but that was unconscious. So in this life, then they became conscious of it, performed the Vrata, and then went back to Godhead. So there is great benefit from all sides. So for the spiritualist, then they understand this is a great month one can please Krishna by performing more devotional activities. You know, but it should be, it's mentioned that the devotional activities or whatever one follows should be something one can do the whole month. One shouldn't stop halfway. So one should find something simple. Because it's even as simple as, there's a story that there was once one Brahmana. And a very greedy Brahmana, extremely greedy. No one liked him. So then he was, he was not, no one liked him, so he had no friends. So he found one friend in some person living out in the forest who just took care of the garden. So then, being friendly with him, then he used to stay with him, and then the gardener one time had to want to go somewhere, to some holy place to take bath. And he would be gone a few days. So then, and he trusted the Brahmana, you know, because they were nice friends and he was a Brahmin, so then he went off. So while he was gone, then the greedy Brahmin then went and picked all the best fruit in the garden and ate everything. And so when the gardener came back after a few days, he noticed that all the fruit was gone. He said, "What happened?" And the Brahmana said, "Oh, the monkeys came and they took everything." Like that. So then in his next life, this Brahmana became a monkey. Right? So then he was a Brahmin. Because he was a Brahmin, he was, you know, devotee. Some sorts, but he was, you know, not very well behaved. And he took birth as a monkey, but he took birth in a very holy place. It was one Tirtha where Lord Ramachandra had come and had blessed this place. It would always be very nice and beautiful, and it was very opulent. So there was so much unlimited fruit trees and fruit and wonderful weather and everything. But one small problem is there is the monkey, you know, had super hyper acidity. He couldn't eat anything. That. So he has all these. So he'd be so frustrated that he would just go to the trees and pick the best fruits, but he couldn't eat them, so he doesn't throw them on the ground. And he'd go and pick others and throw them. So like this, then the Purushottam month came. And then his acidity was so bad, he couldn't eat the whole month, so he fasted for the whole month. Right? And then during that month, at one time he was so weak from the fasting that while he was jumping from branch to branch, he fell out of the tree and fell in that sacred, you know, tank. You know, and this way he took his bath. So from fasting the whole month and bathing in the tank, he went back to Godhead. So the month is very good in this way, from that positive side. And also on the other side, it removes... Well, there is so much unlimited sinful activities and all that are also removed by following the month. There was once another Brahmana who was not very well behaved in that. I don't think he was a Brahmana. He was just a citizen. He didn't behave properly. Nobody liked him. You know, I mean, even his own king disowned him and sent him out into the forest. So then he had to become a hunter and all this and that. And he was very miserable. He was living there, you know, his wife was there. And so then he didn't know what to do. And then I think Devala Rishi came. One of the Rishis came. And then he complained and said all these things. So he told him in a few days this Purushottam month is coming. So during this month, you follow some Vrata and all this, take bath in holy rivers and chant the Lord's name and offer a lamp to the Lord, then, you know, you'll be freed from all this. So then he was freed from all these sinful reactions. In his next life, he became a king with all opulences, a great, greatly opulent king, like that. So then, like this, it also removes a huge amount of sinful reactions. And, by the vratas, then it takes one back to Godhead. So that's the general glories of the mind. Lamp can be offered, but you don't need to, you know, that's the thing. Mostly what it's talking about is in one's own home that the lamp is offered. There's no example of saying that in the temple worship. That's specifically a feature of the Kartik month, that then in the temple, then it's like a part of the temple program that is offered. This is more of an individual offering, because the point is the month is you make your individual, you know, how you say, determination of what you want to do and do that. So generally in the home, whenever it's talking that in the home worship, then one may offer a lamp or, you know, do things for the Lord. Idea is just be more conscious of the Lord and try to do something a little bit more. Yes.
I was in Vrindavan in August of 93 during Krishnamas, and Mahanidhi Swami told some stories from the Pali Purana about the officials. And what I remember, I just want to confirm to you that it's 17 times more auspicious than Kartik, but no offenses are accepted. Whereas in Kartik, everything is magnified, but Krishnamas only.
Yeah. No, I've heard that. Padma Lochan mentioned that. But I'm not sure if that's from Padma or somewhere else. Because whatever I mentioned is from what I had from the Padma Purana. Maybe there's more of things. But I've heard that it's 17 times greater. And there's also different times it falls. It falls in six different, connected to six different months, between the 2 months. So then the one who is connected with Magh is considered the most powerful. Like that. But all of them are powerful. Then that was a little bit more. But it's definitely, it's the benefits that are even greater than Kartik. Yes. For someone's benefit, then traditionally, then you can do for someone's, generally for someone's benefit if they're known or they're close, like that, you know, like that, either, you know, some direct relative or a very close person like that, then it can be done. But that generally is when, to start, you say that that's what it's for. If the benefits of this will go to that person, then when you finish, then you again say that the benefits of this go to that person. You take some water and you pour from it.
And I share this, or this is for me, full benefit from this activity for me, and then for the other person, or this is sharing?
No, if you're doing for someone else, it's just like you have 100 rupees. You can't keep 100 rupees and then give 100 rupees to charity. So whatever benefits that you will get from whatever you perform, if you want to share that, then that percentage goes to them and you don't get it. Like if you say 50%, you get 50% benefit, the other person gets the 50%. You don't get 100% plus give them 50. You know, if you could do that, it'd be great. Get 100%, give the other person 1,000. That'd be terrible. But it's like that, you share. It's just like Karna. He gave all the benefits of all his charity to Krishna. So therefore, it all went to Krishna. So then he didn't have that anymore. So then charity personified wasn't protecting him. Then Arjuna could then kill him. Like that. But as long as the benefits were with him, then Charity personified protected him. And Arjuna couldn't attack him. So it's just a matter of what you give him. So that's signified by taking water in the right hand, pouring it through the tips. After you make your determination, you pour that. And that's universally accepted as a contract. It means, you know, maybe your local lawyers won't think much of it, but you know, the sun, the moon, the wind, the directions, the earth, they all time, they all witness this, and then that benefit will go to that person. you know, once you give that, you can't take it back. Something else? Yes, Maharaj.
What about in terms of bhakti? What benefit?
What benefit in terms of bhakti? Well, I guess it mentions going back to Godhead must be pretty good. Like that. So it means that you do devotional activities, then you get that benefit. In other words, one doesn't get... It is not something one does for karmakanda. It's not going to get that. It's only when it's done with devotion for the Lord, then the devotion increases. At the same time, it's also the material facilities increase. It means when dharma is done, artha is automatic. But for the devotees, because they're performing sadharma, the dharma they perform is for the satisfaction of the Lord. They don't care for the result. But being dharma, it will still give reaction. Just like if you eat something, it's going to fill the stomach, whether you offer to Krishna or not. If you offer to Krishna, then it is sadharma. You get the reaction that the stomach's filled plus the spiritual benefit. While the other, you eat, you get the material benefit, but you get nothing spiritual. So if you perform any activity, the artha is automatic for those who are interested in it, but for the devotee, they're not interested. So it comes automatically. But it's all also for Krishna. I'm not exactly sure the which chapter and all that. We can try to find. Anything else?
This battle of Kurukshetra, Mahabharata. What is the main reason that Krishna was what is the main reason this had to be fought?
Why the battle of Kurukshetra had to be fought?
What was the main theme or what is the main?
This Prithranaya Sadhanam. Vinashaya Chadushkritam. So this was the Vinashaya Chadushkritam and protecting the devotees. Means you have, you know, his five devotees and you have this whole ocean of demons. So the demons are all killed and the five devotees are saved. So that's why you have to relieve the burden of the earth. That's why it was always arranged that it never got called off. You know, it would have been much more peaceful and nicer and, you know, it would have been more butterflies, more, you know, daisies and all that kind of stuff. But you wouldn't have done what the Lord wanted to get the world rid of all the demons. So therefore, it lined up like this. So that had to be fought. Because after that, then you see Krishna went back to Dwarka, and then very soon later, his pastimes are finished, he left. You know? And then the Pandavas, then they also left. And then Pratigat, then he performed his duties. And then Bhagavatam was left. So like that, the Lord's plan. So, thank you. Kataraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Shrimad Prabhupada ki, Jai Prabhu.